Hi, everybody. I'm Beverly. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, I'm going to do tonight what I do every week. I'm going to read something on the step from last week to bring us into step six. Okay, here. Let me see. That's step six and seven. Just relax a minute. I had a grueling day today, so bear with me. Just into action on chapter 6, it says that if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. And then once we do the fifth step, we can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel nearness to the Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Okay. All right, so we're into step six and seven. So step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is AA's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning on this lifetime job. This does not mean that we expect all of our character defects to be lifted out of us as the drive to drink was. A few of them may be, but most of them we shall have to be content with patient improvement. The key words entirely ready underline the fact that we want to aim at the very best we know or can learn. And entirely ready is probably just as powerful as the willingness in the third step. One of the things that I heard when I came in here, the difference, and until I read Drop the Rock, I really thought one ran right into the other, but it really doesn't. I did ask God to remove all my defects of character in step six, because there's a prayer in here that does that, which I'll read in a little bit. But I asked him to remove them, and I believe he did. And living our lives is what step seven is. They keep coming back to haunt us every time God wants us to get a little bit more spiritual. So, in other words, if he takes them away, and then maybe next week or the week after, he throws one at me. And then I have to work on it, and I have to work through it. And then as time goes on, I grow a little more so that the next time it comes, it's not so bad. And I can, I can again pray it away or work it away or however I recognize what I need to do, that's what I do. And it is an ongoing, you know, the 12 steps. Somebody made a statement that you only have to do the 12 steps once. And that's not true. We live them. We live all 12. We can be powerless over something else in our lives besides alcohol. Once we don't drink anymore, we aren't powerless over alcohol. But we are powerless over people, places, and things. And so in step six, we recognize through four and five that what our defects are. So another thing I heard is that step six is when you're driving down the street and someone pulls in front of you and you get very angry. You're very angry. And then step seven is when you're 2 miles down the road and you're still swearing and cursing and hollering. Now, that was kind of an easy thing for me to understand. And I guess maybe in a way it is true, because then you have to look at what is it that keeps you mad and keeps you mad and keeps you mad. You know, that's the defect that we have to look at in every area of our lives. And in here, of course, in step five, I didn't put a little piece of paper in there to keep me... Step six says, you know, these two steps are hard. I mean, I can give you several examples of how I took care of everything one at a time. No, I guess I can't. I guess I didn't do anything. All right, here we go. 12 and 12 set me right. It calls step six AA's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning on this lifetime job. To me, that means step six is not a one-time matter. It stretches over a lifetime of recovery. Even that best possible attitude is always just a beginning. One morning while I was at Hazleton's Fellowship Club in St. Paul, Minnesota, I awoke very early and knew it was time to make that beginning. I took out the list of defects, read it over, and asked myself two questions. Why are you holding on to these things? And what did these things ever do for you? I may choose to hold on to them for fear of letting go, but holding on to them for years and years led me into alcoholism. So I got on my knees and recited the Big Book 7-step prayer, which asked God's help in replacing our willfulness with His will for us. The 12 and 12 calls that replacement a basic ingredient of all humility. So, as I said, I recognized through the fifth step what these things were. And when they would pop up, I didn't know in the beginning that I was supposed to work on them. I got a little angry because I asked him to remove them and he kept them there anyway. And what I didn't know is what I know today, that even today, you know, it's progress, not perfection. And even today, things will come up. And I get very angry, very, very angry. I can get angry just like that. But what I have learned is to wait 24 hours before I do anything about it. And that's very hard for me to do even today, but I do it. I do it. I, you know, tighten my wrists and pray or do something to keep my mind off wanting to pick up the phone and call them and tell them off, or write them a nasty letter and hurry up and put it in the mailbox. But I wait till the next evening, and by the next evening I'm calmed down. It doesn't mean that I like what they did, but it means that I know I can't do anything about it. Because there again, I'm trying to run the show. In all these defects that we have, we want to change other people, and we can't change them. We can only change ourselves. And so we just have to continue to look at them. All right, now, I just want to read this one for step seven. Because we know what our defects are through step five and step six, asking him to remove them and knowing what they are. Now, humility is an attitude. As such, it must be practiced to be maintained, and it must become a discipline to be developed, just like every other attitude. In developing humility, we are faced once again with active surrender. In asking God to remove our shortcomings, we must move and act in a manner that reflects our willingness and surrender. To do this requires spiritual values, service, perspective beyond our addiction to alcohol, drugs, food, sex, and so on, to the addictive nature of our lives, asking through prayer and being willing to receive through humility, trust, asking for help, overcoming fear, understanding and trusting the process, dealing with stress, responsibility, action, solution-based thinking. And what this all sums up to, exactly what I just said. When any of these defects come up, we have to wait. We have to pray. We have to at least for me, waiting 24 hours before any action is done. And because we do this, that's where the spiritual values begin coming into our lives. And, you know, as the years go by, I always say it takes more to get our attention. You know, and when they say bad things happen to good people, I don't look at anything in my life as bad. I look at anything that happens in my life needs to, for me to look at and to see what I can do within me to change. I'm going to do like last week. Ask me questions, and I'll be able to answer them better than trying to just take these steps and apply them. It was easy with the fourth. It was easy with the fifth. But the sixth and seventh, you know, unless I have specific things to tell you about, I can't think offhand on what would come to mind with step six. Well, all my defects, you know, anger, resentment, fear, jealousy, hate. I can also be a very hateful person. And how do you do that with hate? You pray for them. And I remember there was a guy in AA named Gordy Robb, and I'm sure most of you don't remember him here, but he hated his wife, his ex-wife. He hated her, and he told his sponsor, "I hate her. I just wish she'd die." And the sponsor said to him, "Pray for her." And he said, "I can't pray for her. I'll never pray for her." "Oh, yes, you will. Even if you say, 'God bless the son of a,' you know, that's what you do. Because God knows what you're trying to do. So you can use, you know, do anything that you're used to doing and praying for that person." And by golly, he stood from the podium that night after telling us that and saying it took two weeks of praying for her before he finally got some peace. And that's what we have to do. We have to pray for the people that we have resentments against, that we feel hurt us. And maybe they did, and maybe they didn't. But even if they did hurt us, the forgiveness comes through prayer, through praying for that person and forgiving them. And, you know, I'm not one person in my life today that I haven't forgiven, whether I did it or they did it. But that doesn't mean tomorrow there might be somebody else that crops up, because this is a living program. And it's wonderful, and it's exciting, because you know, every day is a new day. All we have is today, and that's another thing that's very important to me. All I have is today. When I get to worrying about what's going to happen in my future next week or the week after, it's very simple for me to just pull it right back in today. All we have is today, 24 hours. And whatever is going on tomorrow, whatever it is that we're looking for, we're not looking forward to, we can't do anything about it until tomorrow anyway. So work on not thinking about it today. And after a while, that works too. You know, all this stuff takes practice. And there again, it's the willingness. And that's all it takes, because when the willingness is there and we ask for help, God shows us direction. He shows us. We don't even have to look for it. He shows it. Either somebody says something, or something happens, or you read something in the newspaper, and all of a sudden you say, oh yeah, oh my goodness, you know. And I think I told you at one point about the time that my daughter was... she was 14 years old, and she was having some problems, and I had to take her to the doctors. And I didn't have any money to take her to the doctors. I was just sober 3 or 4 months. And we didn't have credit cards back then like we do today. And before I'm done with the 12 steps, I'm going to tell you a funny story about credit cards. But as I said, I had no money. And so I knew that I had to take her to the doctors, and I knew that I was just going to have to tell him, "I don't have the money, but I promise to pay you." And and I got a little peace when I said that, knowing that this is what I was going to do. There wasn't any way out of it. And I took my daughter. We went down the stairs because we lived in a second floor apartment. And we got to the bottom of the stairs and the mail had come in. And there in the mail was a check for $15. It was a refund on some insurance. And that's exactly what it cost to go to the doctors that day. And I knew that was God. You know, and that was in like the first and second and the third step. If you really, really pay attention to the things that are going on in your life on a daily basis, and you'll see, really, you'll see how God is working in your life. And you don't have to ask Him. You just have to, it just happens. If the willingness is there, and that, like I said, that's a key word. And like the three steps at the end of how it works, no human power could relieve us, but God would and could if He were sought. And to me, that's one of the most powerful statements in the big book because it's so true. So now, please ask me some questions.
Thanks, Beverly. So now we'll open this up for some discussion. Any comments that you have in the form of questions for Beverly are welcome.
Hi, Beverly. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Yes, Bridget.
Thank you for doing this, these presentations on the 12 steps. When I first came into the rooms, I didn't understand character defects. I didn't know what it was because I still didn't have that awareness. It took me a period of time to come to that realization. But building on what you were talking about, forgiving people, do you verbalize to certain people that you forgive them, or do you just let it go and you just don't say anything and you internally are forgiving them, but you're not making an overt statement to
them? I think it depends on who the people are in our lives and how they affected us or how we affected them. I've verbally apologized for things that I've done, and people that have people that should apologize to me, they ordinarily they don't, but praying for them takes away the pain of whatever it is they've done. And maybe in the future, and this has happened many times to me, maybe somewhere along the line in the future there's a setup and you're with this person and they're open for you to tell them how you felt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a healing. It's such a healing when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just like when we're doing making amends. They don't all happen on the same day. You know, I said last week or the week before, it took 10 years for my very last amend to be made.
Mm-hmm.
They do it in God's time, not our time.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few in the beginning where the urgency was so bad and so desperate that I went to these people and made amends. But other than that, they were people that came into my life or people that I saw somewhere. You know, there is no rule. I know a lot of people say you got to hurry up and do it, but no, because if it's in your time and not God's time, they might not be receptive to whatever you have to say. Did that
answer
your question?
Yes, that did. I had another question, but I can't remember it, so I'll raise my hand in a little bit.
It's going to be an early night tonight, guys. Should I read some more here?
No. Bev, thanks for doing this. A lot of people look at these two steps and they go, oh, there's only a paragraph in the big book and they're not that important and they're probably the crux of the whole program. And trying to describe that is pretty difficult.
Yes.
But as you live this program, things become apparent, just like you were describing.
Yes.
So what I was saying, my question, it revolves around the people that you work with. I know that you kind of let them have it unfold in their own way.
Yes.
But do you kind of like set up breadcrumbs for them to get to the right place?
Oh, yeah. Well, I only share with them what I've done, you know. And if there's something desperate that you have to do, it's a desperation. You know it. You know it inside of you. And the opportunity is there to do it. Do it. You know. And maybe they won't accept your amend. But maybe that's the way it was meant to be. Just because you're waiting until God sets it up doesn't mean that it's still going to be okay. You know, but it's for us. It doesn't matter whether we did it or they did it. It's the peace that we want inside of us of not having anger or resentment against them. And in step six, that's the defects of character that we found out about ourselves in step five, four and five. And step seven is telling us what to do about these defects. And, you know, and I read them off to you here. It's, you know, we have to get out of ourselves and help others. You know, that's a big deal. That's a big thing for me, of getting out of myself and helping others. And doing something with these defects, taking a look at, well, what can I do to change this? And in step seven, it explains to you what to do. And most of the time it's prayer, you know, but until you do it, you'll never see it. If you don't do it, you'll never see it. You'll never see how prayer works. And it is the most powerful thing in our lives, that no human power that God could and would if he were sought. Bridget has another question.
So do I. But that goes closer to the mic. Contrary action in 6 and 7, how do you deal with that?
What do you mean, contrary action?
Well, I was always told that what happens is you replace the defect with an asset, and that you have to...
Yes, that's what this is here. That's what this list is.
Uh-huh.
You know, like spiritual values. You gain spiritual values every time you get through to the other side on something. There, you do grow spiritually, and as the years go by, you can't. You know that spirituality, but that's how you get the spirituality, through recognize the defects in step six, and when they show up, working on them, praying for the people that you have the defect against. Like here, perspective beyond our addiction, looking at to the addictive nature of our lives. That, you know, we can be addicted to anything, food, sex, you know, we can, and what we have to do is pray. That's all I can say. Trust, it says trust, asking for help. So if something comes up in your life and you don't know what to do with it, that's what you have a sponsor for. You know, you pick up the phone and call your sponsor and tell them what's going on. And if they have never been through what you're going through, they will recommend that you find some. They will tell you. They will find someone for you that has been through the situation that you're in to be able to talk to that person to find out how they dealt with it. That's a good question. That's good. That is a good thing. You know, because there's lots of times that things happen to us and... we don't know how to deal with it, but there's somebody in this program that's been where we're at, and they're going to tell us what they did. So,
hi, I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Bridget?
I'm back.
Yeah.
Now I remember my question.
Yeah.
Would you advise or think that it is prudent to avoid people, places, and things that may trigger a character defect once a person has identified that character defect, that perhaps not putting yourself around those people in that place, that maybe that defect won't be triggered if you're not in that atmosphere?
Yeah.
Is that something that you would think about or recommend?
That's what they say. That's what they say. Stay away from people, places, and things that would trigger drinking. You know, I had a girlfriend that I drank with. She was my drinking buddy. We'd go out together every Wednesday night, Friday night, Saturday night. Dance the night away or screw the night away or whatever it was that we were doing that night. Poor Bridget. I'm sorry, Bridget. When I got sober, I told her I was an alcoholic and that I couldn't go out to those places anymore. I couldn't be with her anymore. And she was very angry with me for a long time. But I had to stick to my guns because it's true. Had I gone back to the bars, had I gone out and, you know, and danced and didn't drink, I would have never lasted, never. I used to drive by the Sagerbund Club on Saturday nights on my way home from the Alkanon Club meeting on 6th and East Avenue, and the Sagerbund Club was on 12th Street. But I'd drive up Parade, and I'd make a right-hand turn, and I'd go past that, and I'd look, you know, I'd just look, to think, wondering, what's going on in there? And then I'd get over to State Street, and I'd go down to 5th and turn left, and there was my sponsor's house. So, you know, you do whatever it is that you have to do. But you see, Bridget, you'll be given the insight, you know. You will know what to do. And if you don't know, then you ask the question like you did tonight. But you got to stay away from people, places, and things. No matter what they think of you, it's life or death. You know, and I tell the girls that I sponsor, and if they don't listen, then they don't listen. I mean, I don't lose any sleep over it. I don't get mad at them. I feel sorry for them, because I did everything I was told to do, whether I wanted to or not. I did it. I was afraid not to. My life was such a shambles. I was afraid not to, and I think we all have to come to that point before we can finally say, okay, I give up. And sometimes it's quickly and sometimes it's slowly, but, you know. Is that okay? Oh, good. Okay.
Hi, Beverly. I'm Jeannie, alcoholic.
Yes, Jeannie.
Do you recommend doing the 6th and 7th steps together, like, all the time, or...?
You mean with the people I sponsor?
Yeah.
No. Not really. We do the 7-step prayer.
Okay.
I've done that with the girls, but and I'm going to read that when we're done here. But no, when they're doing their amends, if they want someone with them, and it's a situation that it would not be offensive for me to be with them, I would go with them. But most of the time, no, they do it because it's a setup, you know, and once it's set up for them, the fear goes away, and they just do whatever they have to do in order to make everything peaceful for themselves.
My name is Nadine. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Bev, for sharing on these steps. And I don't know if some of you know or not, but Bev is my sponsor, and everything that she's been saying tonight, I'm nodding my head and going, yep, yep, yep. And I would be in situations where I would have to call Bev because I got my head all twisted up about a person, place, or thing. And her suggestions would usually be prayer. And, okay, I did that. Still not working. Well, how about cleaning the house? You know, staying busy, get out of yourself, you know, call another woman in a program. And all those things were really very, very helpful, even though I didn't really want, I wanted an instant answer. But over the years with Bev, I always wanted her to give me the answer. But, you know, that's not how it worked. You know, I had to feel it. And I had to embrace it, and I had to pray about it. And she taught me how to do that, especially through 6 and 7. You know, looking at myself and not wanting to point the finger elsewhere. Why was I so uncomfortable with myself? And the prayer and meditation helped me with that. And Bev, I don't know if you remember or recall saying to me that with 6 and 7, that 7, the shortcomings, are like our character defects in action. And then that's when we come to that fork in the road of like deciding, do we want to give it to God and, and you know, let it go, or do we want to have it our way, which is usually a big pile of junk and trouble. But I use that today, and it's stuck me ever since, stuck with me ever since you said that, and it makes sense to me. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you,
no
Nadine.
Questions there, I just
Okay. Shall I read the prayer? No more questions? I hope I did a little enlightening tonight anyway. All right, here's the prayer. This is in how it works. And this is before. This is step three. And this is what I say every day of my life. Not in this, the way it's written here, but how I say it from my heart. And it says, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And remember, this truly is a spiritual program. And the longer we're sober, the more spiritual we become. That doesn't mean we go out and preach to the world about God. That just means that we become the kind of human beings that people love to be around. Okay, I guess that's it.